This is an unrehearsed interview with Orlin Corey, a professor of speech at Georgetown College, 1952 to 1959, by Dr. Glenn Tall, archivist. The interview took place in the Special Collections and Archives Room of the Inser Learning Resource Center at Georgetown College on September 9th, 2002.
58, one day. And was at least a half hour, maybe over a half hour. And I went away, shaken, but we were going with it.
Mm-hmm.
I had lots to do. Shall we stop?
Or no, no. Someone just waving to
And the graduate students were arriving, if not that day, the next, and we were beginning this whole new rehearsal round to fit these people in. And so the job was done, and so on and so on. And then the John Henry was also set up simultaneously at the other. We could alternate.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good to have these two things going once in a way. And the job was first done because it's much more complicated to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other was fairly easy to fit in because many of the people going with us of the undergraduate production were still there.
Mm-hmm.
The John Henry, for example, was a graduating, well, he was a junior, for example.
Okay.
So that was fine. But the other, the more experienced people had to fit in. And then we learned what we were about to do a performance just to get the audience, the players used to an audience. And when we learned that information. And so we just packed it. Well, the secretary of the president came over. That day, as we were just deciding, I just said, we don't need the public performance, we just need a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we rehearsed. As we were finishing the rehearsal, this is the day before the other event should have happened.
Yes.
Secretary, the president, came to the door and rapped and asked if she could speak to me, and I said, certainly. And she said, I want to give this to you from Dr. Edelman. There's a little note.
Mm-hmm.
And it was inviting all of us who were going to England. This is about 2.5 weeks after the May incident. We're now in mid-June, nearly ready to leave, you see. We've been in the rehearsal phase.
Okay.
Inviting the whole group to have dinner at his house tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of trustees would be there.
Uh-huh.
Same people who would have been seeing the production
uh-huh.
tomorrow had we been doing it, I suppose. Maybe they were different. That I can't be. I'm just surmising.
Yes.
Because he had a committee coming.
Yes.
That I know. Because the daughter of one of them told us.
Oh!
She was not in the production, but she was very concerned.
Uh-huh.
Because she knew something about what was happening.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I happened to, I thanked her and said, well, let me talk, because young people were scattering. We just finished the rehearsal. We just finished.
Yeah.
I said, I'll reach them in the next hour or two and let you know.
Uh-huh.
But thank you very much. And
now, what time are you leaving the next day?
We were not leaving town the next day.
Okay.
The next day was when we would have had the public performance.
Right.
We would have then left a couple of days after that. Because
okay.
We built special packing for these, and we had the restrictions on the train in England.
Yeah.
It would be moving things, all the dimensions. Everything was highly organized. So all these things had to be done and assembled and padded and
mm-hmm.
put away properly and so on and so on and so on and so on. So we had a couple of days like that to do. And one couple were getting married. Joe Graber and Pat Minton in the company were getting married. So I allowed them a day off to get married. They understood. They were divided with the day. So
uh-huh.
Anyway, you know, I think I misstated something. It wasn't dinner the next day. It was dinner like 2 days later. That was it.
Okay.
2 days later than that moment when she knocked at the door.
Uh-huh.
Because I now realize that that evening, I had dinner with Alice Fogel.
Okay.
His sister Ruth Sheldon, who were great friends of all of this work. And I've mentioned her generosity already to the players, which was a very quiet thing that she did.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this to her and asked her advice. And she said, well, what's your instinct? I said, I don't really want to go. She said, well, that's perfectly understandable, but you asked my advice. Mm-hmm. You should go. Because you do not want him to give any excuse to say that you snubbed him.
Mm-hmm.
That you did to him what he has already done to you. Take the higher way.
Mm-hmm.
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
He quite possibly doesn't expect you to accept, if you want to look at it that way.
Uh-huh.
And would be more put out by your coming than he would be by your not, because he could use that against you, your not coming.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I wouldn't believe it from anybody but you, but I'll accept the advice. So I did, and we did, and she was right. It was very interesting. It was very interesting. This is the other side that, you know,
uh-huh.
I mentioned Dr. Jones today.
Yes.
And the basket of flowers.
Yes.
He'd do this, and then he'd make a public gesture.
Uh-huh.
And some kind of torture. I have a certain sympathy
mm-hmm.
toward this personality. I mean, this was really complicated. And in my read as a layperson 50 years ago, not a very happy person.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's very successful in spreading misery all around him. But that was, it was very interesting. But it was good in many ways. His daughter had worked with us.
Yes.
And that was, I imagine she'd been sent, but she worked with us.
Mm-hmm.
And what that was, who knows.
Yeah.
And so it was honoring Sarah, the daughter, and it was the right thing for all of us to do. And he was a little difficult for him. He played it pretty well.
Uh-huh.
In his way. His way is to never stop talking.
I see. Huh. So there wasn't much conversation coming from your side?
Oh, no. It was a lot of monologue.
Okay.
So it was easy to watch.
Okay.
And it was all right. But anyway, and
now which house did this take place?
Well, the big house at
the college on
which was Main Street.
On the one on Main Street.
Yeah,
so which was done for the one over here.
No, that's where the Hills were.
Okay. And,
yeah, that was all changed. And there's a beautiful. If you don't know that, that's a beautiful.
I know where that house.
A beautiful
is.
Old house.
Yes.
Beautiful. Shows its.
The one story.
It's rare vintage.
One and a half.
Early. Beautiful high ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
With. Full glass on the back side, which was a nice modernization.
Uh-huh.
So you can see toward the campus.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know how the trees are now, but you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was sort of the lead of that. Postscript. Sometime in the summer, he said to someone who told me when I came back,
mm-hmm.
met them on the street, and they said, maybe Ralph Curry, I don't remember now. Maybe. And said, they said something about, well, let's see, summer's going to be, well, Corey's going to be back. Well, he said, if Corey has an ounce of manhood, he'll never come back again.
Dr. Edelman said that?
So he said that. I think it was Ralph who said it to me.
After that dinner?
Well, this would have been in August.
Okay.
A couple of months later. That's very interesting. And then, ironically, after all of the predictions, you know, on his part, but he really wasn't a good drama critic. It was, to my amazement, and he must have been incredulous, the most unlikely success of my life.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, it was created for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It fit like a glove.
Mm-hmm.
What we did was right for where we were going.
Mm-hmm.
But that it went on for 25 years is just really incredible.
Well, that is, at some point I'd like to, it would be nice to get into that part of it. You developed the Book of Job in 56.
57.
57.
Commissioned to do something in 55, spent a year looking, then spent a year adapting and then designing.
this ritual production. It would be staged in October.
And it came out of this invitation from the British?
From Martin Brown through the Religious Drama Society.
Okay.
And he had wisely moved over to English Baptist Union because he sensed, wise man, that that would be a good relationship here. And it always was played that way here, mm-hmm, that it was mm-hmm. the Baptists who were asking us to go, which was a little ridiculous in a way. The other way around is that we were being asked by the British Drama League, which is all of Britain, and also the Religious Drama Society, which has on its board Baptists and Presbyterians and Catholics and Anglicans in England. You know, they're very, very concerned with a theater of some importance and some significance.
So what were the practical limitations, if you want to call it that, that you had to work within to produce a play like that?
Well,
or to even write?
Well, when I chose Job because it was biblical.
Right.
I knew something about it. Had been in a production myself many years ago of a modern version, then had directed another modern version. It was quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And these things are subject to many different... J.B. wrote Archibald MacLeish about the time that we were doing this, about a year after this, he did his. A totally different way. Again, these classics are full of potential to be played many ways. I chose it, though, because it was biblical, because I really felt this is the book that's full of the great questions of the Bible. In fact, it's the great questions of all religion. Who is God? Where is God? Who are we? How do we please? What is right and wrong? Why is there evil? All the great questions. There are over 100 of them. Over 100 questions asked by Job. Many of the same questions we phrased. They break into about 10
mm-hmm.
fundamental questions.
A lot of repetition in those.
Yes, but that's the old way.
Yeah.
You sing it, then you sing it again, and then you ask if you want to hear it again, and you do it another way. It's very interesting. The Greeks did this somewhat in their tragedies too.
Mm-hmm.
They would move it slowly, and the Hebraic way was more or less like it is here. And you do it this way,
uh-huh.
and then you come at it another way. So the point has been made in their tradition thrice, three times it is said. Slightly different ways, of different nuance, and then moves on.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the adaptation would be to simplify that, you know, because to do it so clearly once that one moves on.
Yeah.
And the essential of all things dramatic is that there's some kind of movement. I don't just mean activity. There's some progression in the question, in the anguish, in the laughter, it keeps going on into something else.
Mm-hmm.
And two, we hold to the end. If it's a good piece, we're held to the end. If it's not, we get tired of it.
Well, you've got to dramatize the struggle somehow, don't you?
And, well, but not in the general sense, yes. But in the Job, I mean, there it is. And he talks about it, and his friends come and argue with him
mm-hmm.
and raise questions. And so you have rounds of debate. There are 7 levels of debate. Notice these sacred numbers start appearing.
Right.
And that's its own matter. Now, the introduction that is written to the anthology gives you probably just a very good one page about the approach to that.
Okay.
But the choice of doing it as a ritual piece comes back this way. Not only the settings, which sent me to the language to use the Authorized Version,
mm-hmm.
also moved me to the necessity of chanting and singing as well as chorusing in a vocal sense rather than the singing sense, as well as declamation. Use all of the speech arts according to the seeming direction of the anguish that's in it, to assign, but the real thing impressed me was this is really archaic, but it was very critical to this, was to go back to Aeschylus's play of Prometheus,
mm-hmm.
Bound, where Prometheus has been put at the end of the world, on a rock above the sea by Zeus, because Prometheus loved mankind and wanted to give him light and gave him fire and gave him things to create, and Zeus mm-hmm. wanted to keep the world in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And so the wrath of Zeus has put Job here to, I mean, same idea.
Yeah.
Is to put Prometheus here bound. And the various gods or messengers come and torture him.
Mm-hmm.
But the chorus of the sea, the Oceanids, the women that surround the ocean,
mm-hmm.
they're the earth. They understand him, they honor him, they sympathize,
mm-hmm.
they believe in him, and he in them. That's a concept that was used here. Job.
Okay.
The chorus of the men who have basically the same theme, even though they have different versions of how they deal with it, becomes in effect a chorus of friends, antagonists, or if your friends like these, who needs
enemies.
Antagonists, enemies, yeah. Exactly. And then the most intense of his language was assigned to a chorus of women. So they did the innermost, tearing, weeping, anguish. That's the way it's worked that way.
Mm-hmm. Then this is in Prometheus.
Yes, well, and this is how the Job was done.
Yeah.
Chorus of women. Which
oh, okay.
Five women, five men, hence the ten. And so it was done that way.
Okay.
And that was the rationale of doing it. And then to use all of those arts of the chant, not Gregorian, but we made up our own chant, so we'd have a primitive chant.
Okay.
Quite different.
Okay.
And this is why it took 6 intense weeks of 8 hours a night, 6 nights a week, to do the first time. After that, we never had to start again without somebody who wasn't clued in to how to go to work with this. But that terrific job, and these people were all carrying heavy class loads.
Yeah.
And they all were B average or above regardless.
Uh-huh.
So if you got to do it, you got to do it.
Yeah.
Amazing. Anyway, that ceremonial ritual sense of the Job
mm-hmm.
lifted it above boils and ashes and dirt and snakes
yeah.
and heat
yeah.
and turned it into really the sense of what Job has become, the glory of Job. And we see him that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may talk about he was patient, he was not, he was impatient. He was not poor as a turkey, although
well,
says, never
you
mind,
know,
you know.
I read the book of Job after I heard all that
yeah.
Thing about him being patient and all.
Yeah,
I
know, it's not there.
Why was he patient?
No, he's not there. Other than that, he didn't lose faith in God.
Yeah.
And he held on. That's the reason we remember.
Mm-hmm.
He did not despair. He couldn't understand.
It was
all much too big for him.
He was defiant.
He called for him and urged him, etc., etc. But ultimately, when that voice comes, it doesn't answer one of his questions. It asks him larger questions. The growth is in the questions,
mm-hmm.
which is when the religion at its best asks great questions, and then you search. And then that's where you must have faith.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, the drama at its best works the same way, too. Anyhow, this was all meant to be very self-contained. Now, as to physically staging it, I knew many of those churches would have narrow little choirs
mm-hmm.
or transepts. If we were in an Anglican, we'd have a divided nave, we would have some space. But wherever we were, because we were up to wherever we were going to be invited.
Yeah.
So we only brought with us one, two, three boxes, each just one step up in height, each just one step, then one on top of another.
Uh-huh.
And the fourth one was a little higher so he could sit on that. These boxes, you lift the lid off and they would fold. So they travel flat.
Okay.
As I said.
Okay. And they were made of wood?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Made of wood. And they were hinged properly this way.
Mm-hmm.
And you just simply assembled them, and there they were. You could put them in 5 minutes.
Okay.
And if a space was too narrow, in one case it was, we couldn't use the widest one, so we used the next two. But in all others, they all worked.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it turned on the language and the voicing. And the imaging, the ritual, the image ritual that enhanced this, all styled in terms of the church. And music, we used their organ. And we'd instruct the organist where we wanted just a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, let them freestyle the processional in,
mm-hmm.
usually with something from Bach.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, whomever, Bach, so it's joyful.
Uh-huh.
Let's say, in thee is gladness, be a good example. For the recessional.
Okay.
And later, all these things evolved further, but they still worked out this basic idea. And the players were the show. The costumes were the set.
Okay. How did the costumes and the makeup evolve?
Well, back again, it's going to be in church. How do you image this? One of the things I did was I researched the imaging of Job historically. Job next to Peter, the Virgin Mary, and Christ is the fourth most pictured individual in the Bible, which is interesting. I didn't know that until I began the research.
Mm-hmm.
Christians are often not aware of that, but if you are pursuing certain kinds of sacred art,
yes.
you begin to discover this. It is interesting. Anyway, and then I presume St. Paul would be right after Peter, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes. But in descending order, then you reach Job. Even Moses, he rivals Moses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In replication, in imaging. The oldest we have is in a Jewish synagogue in Iraq. That must be the 5th century before Christ.
Huh.
And the Jewish tradition is not, the Orthodox is not of imaging. Or not of perfect imaging. Imperfect imaging.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you come on this way. Anyway, the choices were to belong in the church. We didn't want it to be Bedouin.
Right.
It was easy to get rid of what it didn't want. We didn't want it to be modern with boils.
Right.
But rather it became a sense, as did the language, all of this, the glory of. In other words, we were to see Job as he now has become in our consciousness across all of these years. The triumphant one, the one who did not despair, the one who believed against all odds,
uh-huh.
and held to his course and was ultimately vindicated by the Almighty. Well, then into the Christian forms, the Romanesque sculpture, very medieval, and I was to use it later with the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
Very appropriate for the saints. That's too Christian, because
mm-hmm.
he's pre-Christian. Stained glass, medieval. It has its place, and we were to use this in other ways too.
Yeah.
And working through them, we filed ideas.
Yeah.
But didn't want the Job to be just medieval.
Mm-hmm.
Though either one of those would have worked in the English churches. Mosaic is classic.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back maybe a couple thousand years before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those forms, once it appeared, it's become accepted by the Greeks, the Romans, the Jews, the Christians.
Mm-hmm. The Muslims.
Yes, the Muslims, they will go for the geometric,
mm-hmm.
they'll go for that. And so lean toward that. And then chose, because that bridges both dispensations.
Uh-huh.
And if the people want to look at it and see glass, and many of them did, they'd see stained glass. Who are we to, you know? If we're going to instruct them, what they've got to be given a manual, and got to read it and have a test and
yeah.
do it our way.
Yeah.
But again, the theater works in that kind of ambiguity.
Uh-huh.
And so ultimately, that was it. That's why the decision. It was classic, it did not specifically date it to any period or culture.
Okay.
And then that geometric then began to fit with the way the chorus was done.
Mm-hmm.
bits and pieces, the way the words and lines were put together, and the voicing,
mm-hmm.
and certainly at home in any church setting,
mm-hmm.
be it Georgian, be it contemporary, be it Gothic, be it Romanesque or Baroque, it fits anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We later realized, but we did it at the time for the English churches. This also dictated choreography, because these you're not going to be casual when you look like you're off the wall at Ravenna. Those are not casual figures.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no. So high formality, great presence. The gestures tended to be uniformed and coordinated.
Mm-hmm. Almost liturgical?
Well, yeah, absolutely. They were liturgical.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go into certain, we did a general kind of blessing approach, but a general one, not a specific,
mm-hmm.
so forth. But we worked a lot. Ultimately, I chose the Ravenna mosaics as the sort of primer to work the choreography around. All of this then fit together. And the faces were simply too complete, otherwise you just have an actor in an odd costume.
Mm-hmm.
But then this unified it.
Mm-hmm.
A final thing that we didn't really anticipate, I like the fact that there's a surprisingness after all the theory, and that is that when this has come together, the look, the language, the voicing, the unified ritual movement,
mm-hmm.
then this cracks and breaks with the passion. The face is shattered. It's all this.
Oh.
It's like the stained glass, cold and perfect, and suddenly the whole passion shifts the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which was part of its visual appeal.
Yeah, how did you affect that part?
You just have the face.
Okay.
And then the face moves.
And the face moves.
It smiles.
Okay.
And the whole thing happens. And the anguish comes through.
Okay.
In the voicing and the act of the whole body's involved. And the photographs in Odyssey of Maskers,
mm-hmm.
which are on these pieces in action, it's astonishing what you're seeing there.
The
outrage, everything's exaggerated because the mouth is larger, the eyes are bigger,
okay.
and so forth. So at the same time, it has a restraint inside it.
Okay.
One of our anxieties over the years was to be sure that nobody ever made a photograph of a Job actor in costume drinking a Coke or smoking a cigarette. See,
yeah.
now you understand what I mean. It has to be appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're tired, they take a break, whatever, eat a candy bar, or some of them smoked, I believe.
Yeah.
No way.
Uh-huh.
That's absolutely verboten.
Uh-huh.
Total privacy. And anyway, all of this worked incredibly, and of course what happened was at the World's Fair in Brussels, it was a smash with an international audience.
What year was that?
58,
okay.
Same way.
All right. All
by
right.
way of, we went to Brussels first, then came back to England.
Went to Canada, to Brussels, and then...
To Brussels, and then moved to, from the Brussels Fair, then we went in the production there, then to Canada, and British press had picked up the reactions in Brussels.
I see.
And because we were coming to Britain, they were widely played.
I see.
In the press, which was a great help there.
Yeah.
And so basically the reception of the Job was always greater in England than it ever was in America.
I see.
We ultimately had 5 tours in Britain over the years.
And this is after you left Georgetown?
Yeah. The first one being 58, we were there, with 4 other tours over the years.
Yeah.
And some of them would be 2 months long. And
who was your sponsor then?
Well, it would depend.
Is that right?
It would depend on who was...
Did you own the copyright to it?
Oh, yes, to the adaptation and the designs and directed the show and so forth and so forth. But, and this is the Everyman Playhouse, you see. It became that... The first summer we did Job Outdoors, and this is now jumbled. I've lost the sequence in telling this. Which was 1959,
okay.
which grew out of that reception in Europe, it was still as the Masscrafter production.
Okay.
Though I had left the college by then.
Yeah.
But it was the Masscrafter production.
I see.
But I had also bought the costumes from the Mass Grappers. Bill of sale and paid money, and the money went to the Mass Grappers. That was one of the efforts made after we left by one person to do something. This is after Dr. Edelman. And that stopped it cold. Yeah.
How did it played at Pine Mountain State Park for
20
years.
Years.
20 years. Mm-hmm. How did it get to that stage?
Let's go back to Brussels. That press, and then English press coupled, and some of this press then in turn got back through AP to the Courier Journal, Lexington Herald.
Okay.
So there was awareness of this. A Kentucky group, Georgetown, Mass Grafters. We were all a cast of Kentucky colonels.
Yeah.
Happy Chandler came over the night of the John Henry, which he loved, oh, he loved John Henry, and made everybody Kentucky colonels. We were a whole nut bunch, you know, with our own comments about it. We're a basket of nuts. And in England, we were called a cast of colonels. And then, you know, the press is always, they play these word games. They can't resist them.
Yeah.
Anyway, something about Job and Mosaic, he's all to pieces. The Southern Governors Conference was slated to meet in Kentucky in September.
Okay.
News of that reception in Europe reached Governor Chandler. The lady in charge of doing the arrangements for him was Catherine Connor of Bardstown, who'd been involved nationally and also statewide in Democratic politics since 1930. Uh-huh. Very savvy lady. She was the one behind the Stephen Foster story. Got that to happen. But she was also keenly aware of Job in her own life, and responded to the potential of this in the show business sense.
Uh-huh.
So she went to the governor and said, look, let's really do something different. Well, he liked the idea, and he said, my colonels, he said.
Uh-huh.
My colonels. So anyway, he cabled us, command performance. Come to the Lexington Country Club for the governor's luncheon and do Job. Well, I thought, but letter followed.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning, you know, I was returning to teach at Georgetown.
Yeah.
Which I was to do that fall, anyway, and so forth, and other things were going to happen that fall, which I didn't know. There's enough come on my plate coming up.
Yeah.
But anyway, I decided that I could do a smaller version. I didn't really have time to get any new people involved.
Yeah.
But I had a fair continuation of people. Remember, I had a core of people who were students.
Yeah.
In addition, there were two or three others on the campus who had been in the production before and whom I had left out because they didn't meet my mix of needs.
Yeah.
So I could put them back in with short review. Time to adjust the costumes.
Uh-huh.
And about the 16th or 18th, somewhere around the third week of September, mm-hmm. we were at Lexington at the Country Club. And there was Job. And I enjoyed this very much. The ironies of this are wonderful to me. Job was scheduled between, the whole thing began with mint juleps in the patio.
Uh-huh. Yes.
For the wives of the governors and many congressmen's wives and many senators.
Uh-huh.
There were about 125 dignitaries there,
uh-huh,
from all over the South. They were there. And we were doing makeup and looked at, and they said, well, Job will have to handle mint juleps. That's the way it is. Maybe it'll help.
No!
Anyway, we had no idea. The truth is, they were just people.
Yeah.
Of course. But, you know. And then there was lovely music, a medley of Stephen Foster music and other kinds of Kentucky music,
uh-huh,
and so forth, going on with wonderful band. And then the main course was over, and before dessert, it was Job. Well, we said we'd do a version. We did a 45-minute version,
uh-huh,
because you just remove certain sections, you know. That's uh-huh, the advantage of that. But it was quite sufficient. It was in a very unlikely place.
Yeah.
A country club, a parlor, a bay window.
Yeah.
With the blinds drawn so the glare wouldn't hurt. Lights on them from the floor. And a little recorded music from the entrance and left. It held them like a spell. When it was over, it was standing ovation time. And Catherine Connor, with tears in her eyes, said, we must keep you folk performing Job. We must keep Job in Kentucky, she said.
Uh-huh.
A week later, she called and said, would I meet her at Pineville,
uh-huh,
on such a day? And she could pick me up here and drive me down to Pineville to meet with a committee of people.
Uh-huh.
So I could.
Uh-huh.
I did. If I couldn't, I would have. So I did. And there was a committee there of major business types of Pineville, mostly, but some from Middlesbrough. You see, that same summer, the state had made a survey of its state parks. Pine Mountain State Park on the weekend of July 4th had 5 visitors.
Mm-hmm.
They were thinking of closing a number of parks. She had played this anxiety. She knew that beautiful natural amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
Played in the anxiety to organize people to meet and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought the press clippings, and I had the press from Europe. But it's mostly her say-so.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided they'd do it for a summer. If I could do the show, get it together for them, and develop a budget and do this and that, all those things were laid out that day.
Yeah.
And so this came about. It didn't get gelled. It didn't gel down there till about the week before Christmas.
I see.
It took about 3 months from that time for them to get all together.
Yeah.
It's how they would do it. The men's club would do this, the Rotary part would do that, and the women's club of the city.
Uh-huh.
They did pieces of it. Who would do the publicity? Who would do whatever? And then, ultimately, then, the Job was invited to be a feature of the Mountain Laurel Festival.
Ah.
Instead of the usual sort of whatever the usual was, I never knew.
Uh-huh.
In the years later, I was never there at that time because it was the end of May.
Yeah.
And so, but we were on that last night of May, 1959, and Tom Cheney, who was president senior class, of what could not, that was graduation, he couldn't come.
Yeah.
Because he had to be there.
Yeah.
And several others too, and they got roundly chewed out by people. Came
uh-huh.
to this, and we did it to 2,500 people on a cold, damp night in Pine Mountain
uh-huh.
under a full moon. And John Ed Pierce was there from the Courier Journal and wrote an absolutely fabulous feature about it, about a page and a half.
Uh-huh.
It appeared 4 days later. And then the play itself was to begin the following week in its summer run there.
I see.
And we shouldn't have made it.
Uh-huh.
'Cause, you know, it's cold down there till late June.
Yeah.
And when we got to our first Monday night, our first night was a Monday, and we had 6 people in the audience, or 7, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And you, breath everywhere, so cold. We knew we had to do something.
Yeah.
And that's when I called AAA. I did some of the homework that they had not done locally. The committee didn't know.
Yeah.
I just assumed these things were done, and that's when I stopped assuming. And we found that we should have started maybe at the end of June.
Yeah.
Tour season begins the weekend before July 4th. We learned all these things that morning in 3 phone calls. We would have 4 weeks of just hanging on.
Yeah.
and we're going to close down. They have it closed the end of July. We should have opened the end of June and closed the end of August. But we did make it. We did all kinds of things to promote.
Okay.
All kinds. And actually made it the final night. The attendance that night tilted the scale.
Okay.
The piece ended in the black with like $30 out of a budget of maybe $25,000, whatever, I don't know. They had lots of costs, I don't think about that side of it. And we signed a new contract for the next year.
I see.
But by then, of course, you see, when I signed, it was I would bring the Mascraft to production.
Yeah.
But by then, of course, and that's when the Everyman Players was then organized as a different entity out of Georgetown, a lawyer drew it up here.
Okay.
As an incorporated, as a nonprofit. So it was with the Everyman Players thereafter, production of the Book of Job.
Okay.
And from there, it went on. And a year later, the real breakthrough, the next time, it did very well because we started at the end of June. We did the things we'd learned.
Yeah.
Went at the end of August. The season was much better. Word of mouth was better. AAA had come in to endorse it. The park traffic was picking up. It was doing what it had to do there.
Yeah.
And there was a new governor then, Bert Combs.
Right.
From the mountains, who was very interested in Kentucky's park system, and he did a tremendous job.
Yeah.
He moved us to the number one state in the nation. It was like number last then in quality of work. And he was particularly interested in Pine Mountain State Park because of the Job play and the way it was working. So they poured a lot into that to help make that happen, which would be very useful by the time you get to 1961 and 62.
Yeah.
That's when the dividends paid out. But the late 60, late in the season, in August, the, no, is that right? No, that's right, it was, in 60. The, I'm wrong, 61, it was in the next year. The Nashville Tennessean came up to, now I have it all wrong. It was the 1960, it was the second year, that's right. And Clara Hieronymus and Terry Sullivan from the Tennessean saw it and wrote a gorgeous two-page feature with color photos.
Ah.
And we didn't see the Tennessean in Pine Bowl till Wednesday. It was out on the next Sunday. We didn't get to the Wednesday after.
Ah.
The way the mail was. And
right.
The Tennessean, I had to special order it.
Yeah.
So on. But on the Monday night after, no, on the Monday morning after the Tennessean was printed, and 3 days before we saw it, Life Magazine called, Look called. And Life Magazine had two photographers in there, Don Cravens, for example, on the Monday night. We did a photo call till 3 a.m. He shot 1,700 pictures.
Wow.
And Look was in there the next day and did a bunch. And that was the life story that appeared then. The issue following Kennedy's election that November. That's how I suddenly corrected my dates.
Ah, I see.
And it said Georgetown College Mascrafters.
Oh, it did.
It's very funny. So, you know, it was difficult to change the brand, but it's fine. I didn't grudge that at all. And I was able to write a letter, say, probably saying, now I am at Centennial College, but this is the Everyman Players.
Uh-huh.
But that article, they changed the captions a bit.
Yeah.
But that article and pictures, Life used three other times. Two times in Life International over the next 3 years.
Wow.
And once again in another spread in this country, in regular life. And after that, that's when a New York producer appeared.
Mm.
And then that is when, and so it just continued moving.
I see.
And long beyond the summers.
Okay.
In fact, there was a tour. There was a tour to the Kentucky Homemakers, I think it was.
Mm.
Big convention in Lexington,
mm-hmm.
in early January 1960. We played that to like 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 in some big coliseum over there.
Well, it's probably UK's Memorial Coliseum.
Very likely. It must have been that. This is now almost 50 years ago. So anyway, 42 or 3 years ago. But anyway, it's Lexington, it was for that group. And then we also did a tour in Florida that spring, in May.
Uh-huh.
And by now the company, most of whom were still from that time, they were in graduate school or they were doing whatever, but they made a point of coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some people with us for as long as, one as long as 13 years.
Goodness. Goodness.
And a number for 8 and 7. And gradually then I'd replace piecemeal from around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But that was so. Do you know of Warren Hammock?
No.
Okay, well, he created the Horse Cave Theater.
Okay. Oh, he's a Georgetown graduate.
That's right.
Yes.
He was a drama major.
And yeah,
he went to England in 1958. He was in the first Job production.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he played the Job in New York, which really started his professional acting career because of the New York credits. So.
Okay.
And you know Walter Rhodes, not as well known here, but also a graduate from Georgetown.
Okay.
From Russellville. His real name, his natural born name was Walter Reed, but when he went to Equity, they had to change the name because of the Reed chain of movie theaters.
Okay.
Because he would appear in a cast lineup and every producer would hire him, you know, because they thought they'd get that money. So he had to have a different name and it became Rhodes.
Oh, good. Now is that R-H-O-D-E-S?
That's right. Walter teaches now at Wright State University. But also is one of the few actors I know who acts whenever he wants, wherever he wants.
Yeah.
He's always in demand. If he's available, he'll get anything.
Marvel. Now, what were the circumstances of your leaving Georgetown?
Well, so we came back, and I apparently had a different kind of manhood than men thought I would have.
Uh-huh.
As I came back. But we got to that early October, I believe it was. And by then, stuff was beginning to fly about this, which is another issue.
Right.
But I was auditioning for Julius Caesar. And because the Job had been revived, it became the touring piece again for the next. I just took advantage of that.
Uh-huh.
And left it together from the country club. Just put other people in, brought on back to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
Which was fine. It made for a lot more publicity for the show in the future.
Okay.
I mean, I hadn't thought of that till I began then to think about the future.
Okay.
With the Job. And I was casting the Julius Caesar. And we had made the designs and were about ready. We were ready to buy the first lumber.
Yes.
And to get the first nails and whatever to begin that construction work. All of which should be done on the stage by the students in Lewis Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
No other place to work. But that's all right, you can do it. And we were ready to do that, and we placed the order. And the mask crafters, you know, for years are just going by.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be billed. But I think it was Oldham Lumber called me and said, "Oh, Mr. Carr, I'm so sorry, but we've been instructed that you must have a college purchase order to do this." All right. I had not been instructed.
Yeah.
But I was instructed by them.
Uh-huh.
And I went over and found that they had taken the mask crafter monies. They had seized them.
Uh-huh. And put them into the general fund.
Well, I don't know what they put them in, but they were there. They were in their hands then.
Yeah.
And probably have been ever since. I don't know. And they didn't quite make this clear. The club insisted on keeping its own money, as it did shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those in-between things, but they had seized, I mean, whatever, from whatever account, apparently got it from a bank. So the club just established another account in another bank in their name and went on. And the next year,
yeah,
or that year we were in, but we didn't know that, and we didn't have much money in that anyway.
Yeah.
Because we were starting from scratch with that. We didn't know this had to be done.
Yeah.
So I went over to see about that, and the instruction from the business office was, yes, I should have been told I have to do purchase orders, but your purchase orders must be signed by the president. I said, for nails? I went up to the secretary, and that was right. So, I wrote a letter of resignation from directing the Mass Crafters. And made that very clear. I pointed out that as I was hired to teach the courses which I teach, but never to direct the Mass Crafters, I'm resigning as director of the Mass Crafters, effective this date.
Yeah.
And will work and assist any way that the department wishes me to, but will not serve as a director again. Because I think my presence is an impediment to that program. Something like that. I have a letter somewhere. That went to campus mail. I think it was the next day. If not, I may be confusing the way time is, you remember. Is either it was the day after I did it, or the next day after it was received. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Within 24 hours or so, I had a note saying that my resignation from Georgetown College had been accepted.
Oh, you're resigning from the college?
That's what the letter said. Effective May 31st, 1959. And that wasn't too bad because, you know, one could have fought a fight on the ARP side about this because theoretically I had tenure. But I really didn't want it. And now there's a postscript to that, I was later to learn. The players had lots of friends. Just think of the touring programs and the years and Rena Calhoun's involvement in all those years. So on. Some of her former students, and or maybe former Mass Crafters at other times in the world before me, were on the board.
Of trustees?
Yes. And in one particular case, one lady, whose name I don't remember, but she lived in a town on the river, the Ohio, this part of Kentucky.
Oh.
But anyway, she told Rena, and this story to Rena, and gave to Rena the note she'd had from the president. The president wrote notes to the board about this. The note she'd received was that... he regretted to tell her that Mr. Orlin Corey had resigned from his position at the college after years of good service and so on and so on and so on and so on. He's sorry he was to tell her that. She had called on another friend of hers, also on the board, who was on the inside. And she mentioned this note in her dismay about this. And she was worried about the music program, too. And a friend said, oh, he wrote me, he fired Corey. Let me get the letter. And to her, he had written, I finally got rid of this least trustworthy of a party of untrustworthies on this campus or something like that, and fired him. Now, you see how that... The letters between work both ways.
Yes.
The lady who was on the inside was appalled at the double take.
Yeah.
What that means is it was a betrayal of trust and so perceived by people, even those who were inclined to the view that certain things should be done about the college. That's what I mean about the undoing. When I've said it, the things I'm researching, there probably was merit in the concept of unifying the system. I can conceive of lots of merit to the concept. But ultimately, the means used to that end were, they were self-destructing. They were as bad as... the fuel pump giving out in your car at 70,000 miles. I mean, the means caught up with the other. And remember the faculty meeting account we heard today from Gwen?
Yeah.
That the president said in that faculty, which would have been the last meeting before the he was to resign, why don't you trust me? And her mother had said, and I do, when she recalled, immediately remembered it. But Dr. Edelman, why don't you trust us?
Mm-hmm.
It stuck. Yeah. So the human story is very complicated.
Yes, it always is.
And I'm not judgmental about that, I'm aware. Yeah. Lots of possibilities there.
Yeah.
And I was but unfortunate or fortunate, either both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Small figure in many, many larger incidents here.
Yes.
But in this approach, this double level was mm-hmm. in use with other people,
mm-hmm.
particularly if they were known for writing, if they were known for music, if they had outer influence, because it's hard to deal with those people.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. It's exactly what was happening here. And that's been known too,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
Interesting.
So there, you know, that's just sort of hearsay. That was hearsay.
Uh-huh.
But the other was actually how it happened, that I resigned from Mass Graduate Seminary. Got the other letter.
Very good.
Hope that's a...